Well, the time now is 25 minutes to one, and I welcome in the studio my lovely guest of the day. It's James L. Williams. Welcome, James.
Hi, Steve. How are we?
Very well. Thank you so much for coming in today. I must say thank you to your wife, Sylvia, who's outside at the moment, who's helped you in today.
Yep.
Now, James actually is registered blind and has written a wonderful new book called Ghostly Witnesses, which we'll talk about in some detail in a minute, James.
Yep.
But let's find out a little bit about you, because you were actually born in Wales, weren't you, I think?
North Wales, yes.
Yeah, tell me a bit about your childhood home then.
Right, well, it's a place called Bessers of Coed.
Uh-huh.
That's quite often people mispronounce, but I lived there for 20-odd years. Mm-hmm. I was very short-sighted. I wore glasses from by the age of four. Then I wore contact lenses. I think I was the youngest person in the country at the time, in the mid-50s.
Does that mean that the contact lenses you wore were quite rudimentary then?
Oh, they were the glass ones. They fitted right over the eye.
God, was that uncomfortable then?
It got used to it. I mean, I actually, when I was in work at one time, I took a whack on the eye with
no.
a steel bar.
Blimey.
It's fine. my eye wasn't, but the glass was fine.
What was school like then if you had poor eyesight?
It was okay. I mean, it was okay. I was sitting in the front of the class most of the time.
Mm.
But things got, you know, were pretty clear for me.
And you had a good bunch of mates, did you, at school?
Good bunch of mates, yeah.
Could you play sport?
Well, I played a little bit of football, but I had to be a bit careful because any sort of knocks and stuff like that, I was always warned.
So what was actually causing the problems with your eyes then?
Well, short-sightedness at first, and then when I was 20, I had a detached retina in my left eye.
Yeah.
It was, I had one operation in the local hospital, that didn't work, and I was sent down to Moorfields in London.
Uh-huh.
Had a second operation. I got about 70% of the sight back. And that's when I was, if you like, registered disabled.
Yeah, and what about your other eye, though?
The other eye was okay until 79.
And wham then?
I had detached retina in the right eye.
Oh, dear.
That couldn't be fixed.
Gosh, no, my dad's had a detached retina, and he has got some sight in it. But what causes it to detach in the first place?
Well, I spoke to an optician several years ago, and he said, you've got what used to be known as a Roman eye.
Mm.
And that's where it's not perfectly, it's a perfect sphere. It's more like a pointed thing.
Yes.
Like that. And the retina is, the stress of the retina is not equal all round.
Do you have any eyesight at all these days?
I've got very, very slight light perception. That's about it.
Do you feel a sense of injustice that you've had to sort of endure this?
Not really injustice. I mean, it happens and you get used to it.
Yeah. It seems so arbitrary, though. I mean, you didn't take up boxing or anything, did you?
No.
How do you feel?
Except a few fights with me, brothers.
Yeah, well, you got whacked with a steel bar as well.
Yeah.
How do you feel, you know, as someone who has put up with these detached retinas, about boxing? Because, you know, they're almost asking for trouble, aren't they?
They are. I think Frank Bruno was one who really asked for trouble with his thing, taking chances like that.
Sure.
I used to like boxing, you know, watch boxing before, but I've changed my mind now.
Yeah. Do you listen to much radio then these days?
Oh, radio all the time.
Yeah, good for you.
Yeah.
Okay, so you were born in Wales, but you moved to the West Country. You moved to Bristol in 1973. You were encouraged, I see, by Ron Hewlett and his wife, Wynne.
Yeah.
Friends of yours, were they?
Well, what happened was, before I came to Bristol, I went on a industrial catering course in Exeter.
Yeah.
And that's where I met Ron, who was also disabled. He had other disabilities. And we just struck up a friendship there. We were there for 6 months. And when I finished the course, he said, well, if you're ever looking for a job and you want to move down, get in touch with me and you can come and stay with me and my family. That's what he said.
All right. Well, tell me a bit about your career then. What did you do straight from school?
Straight from school, I went, first of all, working in a local grocery store for 1 year.
Yeah.
Then I went to work in the local garage. It was called Bessers of Coed Motors. And it was during that time I had the detached retina. Well, working in the garage and losing partial sight, I wasn't able to take my driving test.
Of course.
I thought my career there was limited.
Sure. So you moved into catering then?
Well, I was sent down on the catering course by the job centre, as it was.
Did you have any inclination to get involved in catering?
Well, I'd done a little bit of cooking at home, making cakes and stuff and helping my mum and stuff like that. But I thought, well, the only other option was photography in the working in the dark room.
Yeah. Oh well, fair processing. Enough, I suppose. Did you pick up skills in the catering trade then? Because you worked as a chef, didn't you?
Oh yeah, yeah. I did my 6 month course.
Did you ever burn yourself or cut yourself because of your poor eyesight?
Not that time, no.
Gosh.
No, I still had my sight in one eye and partial sight in the left eye.
Okay.
And it wasn't until 79 when the detached retina in the right eye, and then I had to leave the job.
Okay. Well, you moved to Bristol. What was your job when you came to Bristol then?
My first job was actually chef at the Bristol General Hospital.
Oh, right.
I was lucky, really, because Ron invited me down. I came down on a Tuesday. Within 3 days, I'd found a job and a flat.
Were you cooking for the patients or the staff?
Patients and staff.
Yeah. Was it high quality?
Well, the food was good quality, but the thing you have to remember is it was cooked early and then it was put in trolleys, taken up to the wards, so it was hanging around for about 40 minutes.
Had to be reheated then, did it, or did it just go off?
No, well, it was kept warm in the trolleys, but, you know, food is best eaten fresh.
Yeah, so it wasn't haute cuisine then?
No, I wouldn't say so. No.
What were the popular dishes?
Oh, we had the usual roasts and things like that, and fish and chips, and the basics.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, people are lucky to have anything, to be honest. It's all part of the National Service, National Health Service.
Yeah.
Well, as we mentioned, your sight's deteriorated over the eyes, and you are registered blind. How do you spend your time these days, other than writing, then?
It's mostly writing and listening to the radio.
Okay, well, let's talk a bit about your writing then. Yeah. Your new book, your first novel, Ghostly Witnesses, has just been published. Prior to writing this, had you written other stuff then?
No, what's happened between a job working for the Bristol Royal Society of the Blind, which I worked until 1994, and my next job, I went to college to South Bristol College, and learned word processing on computers. And to keep my skills up, I actually got a computer at home and continued practising, if you like.
Well, the book is called Ghostly Witnesses. It's thrills and chills with a paranormal twist. And it's a lovely book, actually. It's a delight to read. You yourself, did you have much of a love of reading, you know, when your eyesight was better?
Yes, very much so. I mean, when I worked in the garage, my spare time there, my favourite author at that time was Wilbur Smith.
Yes, and this has sort of hints of Wilbur Smith, doesn't it? Tell us a little bit about the book. It's based in the fictional town of Clapfield. Why did you go for a fictional town rather than a real one?
Because at first, when I first wrote it, it was just for purely my own amusement, and I really didn't think Bristol would take kindly to what I was going to write in there.
Well, let's talk about the central character then. Yeah. He's Constable Vic Holland. He's overweight and out of condition, is he, at the start of the book? What sort of a character is he? How would you describe him?
He was slightly disillusioned because he'd lost his wife in an accident prior to moving to Cladfield, and that affected his career. When he was there, he didn't fit in too well with the force he was with.
Did you have much experience of the police? I mean, for the research, did you research this then?
A little bit of research, but very little. As I say, I wrote for my own amusement, so I didn't do much research.
Well, I'll tell you what, the most popular detective of all time, Sherlock Holmes, of course, Arthur Conan Doyle, is riddled with mistakes as far as sort of procedure goes and one thing and another. Nobody cares. It's just nice and readable, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay, let's talk about the story then. He moves to this new police force, this chap, Constable Vic Holland.
Yeah.
And an opportunity arises to apprehend two notorious local criminals. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Well, he was on his way home from going off duty, and he came across two of these tearaways running out of a shop after it set fire to it. He gave chase in an unfamiliar part of the town and ended up in this old burnt-out building where they trapped him and basically beat him up.
But a stranger comes to the rescue.
A stranger, yes, but a stranger who, according to police records, had died 2 years earlier in that very same building.
This is the twist, you see. He's helped out of the building by a stranger who should be dead. Did you, when you started, want to write just a straight thriller, or was there always going to be a paranormal element to it?
It was just a straight thriller. That's my very start was. The story, if you like, flowed its way through. I didn't have to think too much on the which direction. It seemed to take its own course.
How long did you work on it for before it was published?
Well, actually, I'd started writing in the late 90s, and then I had another job with the West of England Coalition of Disabled People until 2006. And during that time, I didn't do hardly any writing at all, so I picked it up again in 2006. I was actually writing that book and another one in tandem, and I was jumping from one to the other. When I got bored with one, onto the other, back again.
Now, are you going to do a sequel then, or a follow-up to this?
Well, I'm actually doing a sequel, but I've started doing a prequel about the main characters in there, just to see how they develop up until this Ghostly Witnesses.
And what's the reception been like so far?
It's been very quiet at the moment, although I've heard from my family who still live in North Wales, there's dozens of people trying to get hold of the book.
Well, and, it would make a nice TV adaptation. Not that you'd be able to see it, sadly. You'd be able to hear it, though, wouldn't you, I suppose?
Yeah. Actually, it's in paperback and on Kindle, but I'm still trying to find some way of getting it on audio.
Well, people can find out more details at your website, which is jameslwilliams.co.uk. What does the L stand for?
Submarine.
Fair enough.
Had to be.
The book itself is called Ghostly Witnesses. It's published by the Book Guild, isn't it?
It is, yes. They were very helpful.
Yeah. And who do you think it would appeal to, the book?
I think someone who wants a story with a few twists in it and the odd laugh and the odd change of character.
Lovely. Well, thank you so much for coming in today, James.
Thanks, Steve.
Pleasure to meet you.
And you, sir.
That's James L. Williams, the author of Ghostly Witnesses, and the book is published by the Book Guild, and you can find out more details about James at his website, jameslwilliams.co.uk.